Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock. It is Thursday evening. This is LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina. I'm your host, and I'm actually here tonight, in studio tonight, with the lovely, charming, gorgeous Bobby Jean Bill, and her husband Jim, who is over there snapshotting everything. I don't know, what's he taking pictures
of?
Well,
Facebook later.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I have to... Oh, we're a little loud out in the hallway tonight, too. And I have to say, I talked to Russ Avison earlier this week, and I found him up by San Simeon shooting pictures of zebras.
Who knew there were zebras at San Simeon?
Who knew Russ went up to San Simeon?
Well, there's the first question.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, we're talking Russ Avison here, but I know Russ is our co-host, and we love him. But zebras? Come on, Russ. We have some big news tonight. In 2 weeks, August 4th, the Writer's Block moves to 7 p.m. Pacific time, same night, Thursdays. So make sure you mark your calendars, 7 p.m. on Thursday nights instead of 8. So all you East Coasters out there, we're going to get to you at 10 instead of 11. That'll make things nicer for you. And the central company, the central part of the country, you'll be at 9. So guys like Hagenberger and Johnny Boggs and all those guys, they'll be 9 o'clock instead of 10. Okay, I'm glad to be back. Last week, of course, I was doing procedural changes to my body somewhat. And I actually called into the show last week, for those of you who listened, and I was a little bit off kilter.
Well, it was understandable.
Yeah, I was shoved full of morphine. Which is not a bad thing by itself, but it was an interesting day, and I'm glad I got through it, and I'm feeling oh so much better. And I'm here tonight, and I'll be here probably for the rest of the year. And next week, we have the terrible duo of Eric Heisner and Al Bringus, who always bring a lot of fun to the show. And Eric's got a lot of stuff to talk about, his pirate movie and his book and his sequel to West of Bravo, and he's just got all kinds of stuff to talk about. And I hope Al brings some drawings, because Al's one hell of an illustrator. And then, of course, August 4th, the first night that we go at 7 o'clock, we have a writer named Gerald Dooley, who wrote a book called No Trumpets and No Bugles, and it's called An African-American Story. So that ought to be pretty interesting. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, this is not his first book, but is his first book under his nom de plume.
Oh.
So, and of course, being me, I could be totally back afterwards on that. But who knows?
Tune in to find out.
Tune in to find out on August 4th at 7 p.m. So, actually, the Writer's Block will get to go home a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, this week, we're kind of waiting for Henry to call in, if he's going to do that. I'm sure now he's dialing like crazy to getting it ready to... Henry, come on. Don't let me down. You big bummer.
Oh, Henry, we just want to hear your voice.
Hey, what's going on with you, real quick?
Next week I won't be here because it is the fourth Thursday of the month, and we will have Jerry Hall and Trick Shot coming into town, into New Hall. Repertory East Playhouse is the place to see them. They like to say they are Tulare County's favorite country and western band. And we're looking forward to hosting them. We've got that's really the next big thing up on our docket. And in August, the show's already sold out.
Really?
Yes. The Storytellers.
Good
Joe
on you.
Joe Harrington, who's been a guest here.
Oh, we love Joe. Joe's a good guy.
With Junie Fisher, an award-winning singer-songwriter. The two of them performing together in that show, there's not one seat available.
Ah, well, guess who we got on the phone?
We must have Henry Park calling
in. We do. Hang on just a second. Henry, are you with us?
I sure am.
Okay, hang tough.
Number six was sticking on my phone.
Oh, no worries. Hang tough just a few minutes, and I got an ad to do and just a fuck a couple.
Oh, okay.
Boy, that was a Freudian slip.
There's some morphine.
Okay. No morphine tonight.
Save some for me.
The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing of Simi Valley, the nice folks at Black Dog, by Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall, California, by Target Freight Management in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And we talk about Target Freight every week because they're one of our sponsors. But I don't think I've ever mentioned that Target Freight actually was voted in 2013 as the fastest growing business in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I'm going to move off a little bit from their ad tonight and just kind of talk about the company itself. And the company is just phenomenal. Their employees are helpful, and they're very generous with their time. They have the best shipping in the United States, as far as I'm concerned, and we use them a lot. The folks there, give them a call. They are just phenomenal. Their number there for their full truckload is 844-653-7789. And as Bobby says, get a pencil. If you need to ship something full truck, it's 844-653-7789. If you want to ship LTO, and they've got the best in the industry, call them at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call them today. You're going to love dealing with these guys. They're just great. Henry, what do you got for us?
Well, first off, I just want to say that I have seen herds of zebra at San Simeon. Seriously.
Really?
I mean, I don't want to cramp your guest's story, so I won't say more than that, but they are there, definitely. And anyway, now, you know that I post the Roundup every other Sunday.
Right.
And I rarely update it except to correct errors, which is to say I update it all the time. but I just updated the Roundup yesterday to add my coverage of Outlaws and Angels, a new Western that just appeared in select theaters and on all the various platforms. It stars Francesca Eastwood, Clint Eastwood's daughter, in her first lead and first Western. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Francesca and her mother, the great Frances Fisher of Unforgiven and Titanic, was a strong supporting role in the film. So that's brand new to the Roundup. Also, in the current Roundup, I have my review of The Timber, a new Western starring Gregory Peck's grandson, Josh Peck. I've got my coverage of this year's TCM Classic Film Fest, video reviews from Alpha Video, including old Western series like Last of the Mohicans with John Hart and Lon Chaney Jr., Brave Eagle starring Keith Larson of Northwest Passage, and best of all, the educational Fishing with John Carradine. And I am completely serious. It is a like jaw-dropping delight. And plus, I've got my Farewell to Hell on Wheels, whose final episode will air on AMC on Saturday night. For my money, it's the best Western series since the Gunsmoke days.
I'm dying. And I'm dying. That's going to kill me when that thing goes away.
What I find astonishing is 5 seasons, 55 episodes, it has received exactly one Emmy nomination, which it didn't win, for the brilliant theme by Gustavo Santaolalla, that's close to it. Mm-hmm. Never anything for acting, for mm-hmm. writing, direction, cinematography, editing.
Totally overlooked.
Terribly. Anyway, now in the next Roundup, the remake of The Magnificent Seven is
right.
just around the corner.
Right.
And I'll be reviewing a wonderful book on the making of the 1960 classic Magnificent Seven. And Shout Factory has recently put out, exclusively at Walmart, the complete first season of Daniel Boone, the series starring Fess Parker, mm-hmm. Patricia Blair, Ed Ames, and Darby Hinton. Mm-hmm. And it's got some great extras. I'll be reviewing that. Plus, I've got a terrific interview with Darby Hinton about growing up doing the series. And he's been very busy lately. He's playing Texas's first president, President Burnett, in the recent Texas Rising miniseries. And in Dead of Winter, the Donner Party, he plays George Donner, the founder of the feast. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. And I'll also be looking at one of Fess Parker's last films, a modern-day Western called Climb an Angry Mountain, which has just been put out by Warner Archive. And in the current August issue of True West, I have an article on the Robert Redford-produced documentary series on AMC, The American West.
Mm-hmm, American West. Comes on right after Hell on Wheels.
Hell on Wheels, yeah.
That's right. And I think it's going to probably be for 1 week after. I think they've got one more episode after this
weekend. 10-week series, right?
I'm sorry?
Is it 10-week series?
I'm thinking it might be 8. I'm not sure if it's a full 10. I'll keep watching and see. I'll see what the DVR says.
The only critique I have of that series so far is that they have way too much Jesse James in it.
It's, that's always the problem in the historic series is I think they tend to focus too much on a half dozen figures who are very interesting, mm-hmm. but we know so much about them from so many of these documentary series.
Right, and it's the same half dozen.
Right.
Yeah.
I do think they're doing a better job than most in giving an overview of the history and showing how they all fit into things rather than giving the sense of here's Billy the Kid, here's Jesse James, and here's Custer.
Right.
It seemed to me there was a lot.
Anyhow, you can find all this and so much more on Henry's Western Roundup at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Wow. And now, Henry.
Yes.
Your next call in, which will be August 4th, it's at
I'll have to get up early.
7 p.m. That is correct.
Right. Good. So, I know my wife's going to be happy to have dinner at a normal time.
There you go. And now you can get your jammies on and kick back in your recliner and watch whatever it is you're going to watch.
That sounds terrific.
All righty, my friend.
All right.
Thanks for the
and
call.
I'm so glad to have you back in the studio,
Jim. Me too. Me too. It feels great.
All right, guys.
Thanks for the call, Henry.
Have a great show tonight.
Okay,
thank
bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Henry Park from Henry's Western Roundup. .blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
If he can remember it, I can remember.
And on Facebook.
And on Facebook. That's right. That's right.
Because he posted on Facebook too.
Yeah. And I did post on Facebook that our time is moving. And I actually put you up there too.
Oh, good.
Yes, you did. I haven't done much on Facebook the last couple of days because I've been reading with every spare moment that I had.
as I have said, I try to get like a couple days before. Monday I'll start thinking about it. A couple days before the guests show up, then I'll usually put you on Facebook so people know that you're going to be.
Well, I finally got it on Out West's homepage today, which is about 5 days later than I usually get it on our homepage.
Okay, we have a guest in the studio tonight. I'm going to go out of context here a little bit, and I'm going to look behind me. and look at his lovely wife, whose name is Donna, and it's her birthday.
Oh my gosh, happy birthday. So you came down here to celebrate?
37 years old.
That's right, and this happens to be this gentleman's entourage.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Spoken on unwritten word, it's his entourage. He'll be here with his entourage. Okay, mm-hmm. We have in our studio tonight a writer, a poet, a hick from upstate New York.
Yes.
He is raised by a single mom after his dad flew the coop instead of flying the hump over Burma during World War II. Okay. Where he won the Distinguished Flying Cross. DFC.
Yes,
very, very cool. Yes. By losing both the Japs and his mind. Okay. His departure didn't affect our author, other than not having a male authority figure to either love or hate, as he morphed into an all-American boy and athlete who received a four-year full-boat scholarship to Alfred University that he turned back in a couple weeks before counterculturing his way towards the only degree ever given by Boston University in alternative education. And that's a question I'm going to be asking you very shortly. This, of course, primed him for his meteoric ascent to corporate management and the now defunct computer giants of CompuGraphic?
Yes.
Okay. And Wang, dream job of multi-international customer service manager. Holy crap, that's a mouthful. That's almost worse than Henry's Western Roundup blogspot.com. he lost his marbles and bailed from reality, moving from Beantown to the left coast. He set up shop as a house husband, sans the children, for his corporate executive wife, and thereby bravely embarking on the delusional life of being a novelist slash poet while incorporating the business plan of divine intervention to ensure his inevitable success. Will you please welcome to the writer's block, Peter Jacob Strice.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm happy to be here.
That's all the entourage.
That's it. That is the entourage.
That's the posse as well.
Okay, what is an alternative education degree?
Well, there aren't any other ones, so we don't really know.
Ah.
And to this day, I'm not really sure if I got it. I met one of my professors in a bar about a year later, and he came up to me and he said, "You know, you're the only one who got this degree." But I never got my diploma officially. I mean, I did graduate, but it was supposed in the mail, and I don't think I ever received it.
Mm-hmm. So that's like the check was in the mail?
Yeah. Okay. So I don't really know if that is true, if that was on it or not. But it was a very laid-back course for everybody. You taught small kids that everything in America wasn't true, basically. Mm-hmm. So history,
really?
Yeah, you were always kind of...
Alternative education.
Yes. Everything the real teacher said, we kind of questioned.
Yeah, it's all a lie.
But it was all a lie. Yes, it was all a lie. That's where that all began. So, but I think 10 of us started out, and I was in the first group of them, and they all just left.
Wow.
They never wound up there. So.
Wow. It sounds to me much like a get the hell out of my university degree. You're the only one we really don't want here, so.
Goodbye.
Hey, incidentally, if you want to call and talk to Peter, and I'm sure some of you poets are going to want to do this because he's quite the prolific poet. Number here to call is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And that brings you right into the studio, and I can look right there at your phone call coming in. So that being said, you are a prolific poet.
Thank you.
I had a lot of things I was going to say, and I just actually decided not to say them. I read through your poetry books. I'm not really big on poetry. I read the ones that really grab me.
Okay.
I mean, that's like most people in poetry. They don't read the entire book.
Yep.
Unless they love poetry.
Unless you really are a poet freak, and then you can't get it out of your poor dead hands. There was one. There was one that grabbed me because I happened to have fought against this in 1969, 70, 71. The Kalashnikov.
Oh, yes, yes.
And the other one that really got to me was the one right across the page from it was Assholes.
Yeah, that, I kind of like that poem a lot. And that came from, I forget which movie you're watching, but it's a typical thing where the husband's done all these terrible, terrible things. And he comes in and he's pleading to his wife and he's being really, really nice. But he's done all these terrible things, cheated on her, done everything wrong. And that's been going on for years. And then he's being really sweet and he's saying, "I don't know why I'm like that. I'm not normally like this." And it dawned on me, no, 90% of the time you're an asshole. The way you're playing right now is the nice guy. So I just wanted to say the poem basically says that guys are
assholes.
Some guys are assholes, and they're just, that's the way they are. So when they use that little psychic nice guy thing, it's very
upsetting. Don't fall for it.
Don't fall for it.
And that would come from alternative education.
Actually, that would be coming. Well, I'm going to get to that because some of the poems I read in here, Peter, and I will be brutally frank because I try not to lie.
In this case, you might want to, however.
Extremely dark, and it's very, very difficult to find where in your mind those came from.
Well, I think I say that it comes from spiritual news. And I write a poem, one poem called Verse, and it starts out about it's spiritual news. And when I say spiritual news, I don't mean religious news, but it's like everybody says the good stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, the stuff that gets you an A or gets you a date or makes your father-in-law maybe mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. you or your mother-in-law. But I think in each of us there's these particles that are kind of left behind mm-hmm. and they're never really said. And so most of my poem kind of come from those unsaid particles. And they are dark because people don't want to hear them or they don't want to admit to them or they don't want to... So that's when I'm saying spiritual news. It's more like it's coming from evolution or something. It's just inside you.
Yeah, I think it's probably more from the fact that people really don't want to admit they have them,
mm-hmm.
or
absolutely
even look at them.
Yes, yes.
That's a very good explanation, actually.
It's the stuff they kind of leave behind. Like I think, and I never really kind of thought about this before, but like when we talk about PC. it's interesting because we all know that people are saying something, but they're leaving a bunch of the stuff behind, and they're manipulating and they're recalibrating. So those fragments that are left behind are what I try to put down on the page. So that's.
I think with every conversation that people have, and I don't think that there's an exception here at all, is that there are always things left unsaid.
Yes, absolutely.
And people, they hold them in, or they grab them out of the stratosphere, and they make them their own, but they don't want to say it, because most people are afraid of being anything but politically correct.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what we've done to ourselves as a society. So your poetry just takes that, I think your poetry takes that and gives it life.
Thank you. I mean, because most people want to be comfortable, and it's much more comfortable to be there.
Oh, absolutely.
To be politically. I mean, a lot of it, for instance, I think, and again, I've written about this, that the philosophers, they kind of destroyed my life. I read too many philosophers, too young, and what they were always kind of, the only thing I ever learned out of philosophy, I never understood Kant, that's one guy I never understood, but the only thing I learned about it is they were always teaching you that there really was never, there was no truth, there was never one answer to anything. So you're constantly on unstable ground if you're going to have a philosophy. Now, if you have an ideology, you're there. You've got the whole tent. You got the people like you. So you're much more secure there. But if you have a philosophy, and I would say really thinking, it's always unsettling. You can't ever grab hold of it. You can't ever relax with it.
Well, isn't that the whole idea of philosophy? There is no real and true answer to anything.
Absolutely.
Everything is a state of your mind, and it depends on how your mind is looking at it as to whether it's your truth or not.
Absolutely.
I took philosophy. I had to take a semester of it in college. I don't know. Most everybody has to take at least a semester of it. And my professor's name was Gruber, and our final was he put a glass of water on a stool in the middle of the classroom, and he said, "Your final is explain to me why that is a glass of water."
Other than a glass of water,
sitting on a stool.
Yeah, that's I was. Yeah.
So the obvious answer to me was name at the top, Professor Gruber, what glass of water, and handed it in.
but you know, I'll tell you.
And did you pass?
No.
Having a philosophy, it gives you really crappy SATs, though, because you know you look at the old, you know, 2 + 2 is supposed to, you know, the answer is 4, and you're kind of a trick question.
Yeah,
I mean,
you always think it's a trick question.
Yeah, is this an Einstein? Does he get involved here or something? So, yeah, and oh, but I just want to if I did write a poem called That Not Said, and it was exactly, Jim, as you were talking about, so about the things we don't say, and they can, and in the poem, someone he loves more than anything is walking out the door, yet he still can't say it.
Yeah.
And I just feel so bad when that happens to somebody. And I guess my only other point about that, doing a digression, is as Faulkner once said for the writers and poets, how graced we were to be able to express ourselves, and how unfortunate or how hard it is on the people that can't express themselves.
Yeah, you see it a lot in divorce situations where guys and gals are splitting up, and they never can really say, you know, they never really can come out and say what the deal is. You know, it's like, well, it's not me, it's you. Well, you know it's you then. When says, you know, that's an automatic, that's a gimme. Well, it's not me, it's you. No, it's me. I can, you know, it's the way you said it, it's the way you blinked,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, and I think in the book Past Oz, which we'll talk about, I know we're talking about poetry, but in what we're chatting about right now, in what's sort of behind the word, we see that so much with the main character. We are in his head the whole time.
Right.
And it shifts from moment to moment, and it's thick with what his thoughts are and how quickly they can change. He'll be thinking one thing, and then he looks away, and suddenly he has another thought, and you share all of that. And if he verbalized a lot of that ever to anybody, I don't know if he'd have friends or not. I mean, he has two wonderful women that have been in his life.
Right.
But I don't know that he'd ever shared with either one of them a lot of what's going on there.
Well, with him, it's kind of like another shot, another beer, another thought process.
Well, you know, I know sometimes, and I'll just be vulnerable here, I'll go to sleep and I'll try to go to sleep, and I work on a computer till really late at night, and you're never supposed to do that. You're supposed to allow yourself to kind of wind down.
Right.
And so I'll just, you know, be going to bed, and I can't shut off my mind. And it'll jump from one, not necessarily thoughts like this character has necessarily, but, you know, I'll be jumping just from one thought to the next, and I might be having a memory of something from when I was a kid to something that's currently on my plate that I'm wrestling with. And it just goes so fast. And I've never really thought, like, oh, I should maybe try to write some of that down. I don't think it would be very interesting to anybody, but you make it fascinating because this is how we meet this character.
Yeah, I think, Shields, he has this overpowering realization that he's never really telling the truth. That he hasn't expressed everything that he kind of feels, and in the women in his life, as you said, there are two wonderful women in
wonderful
his life,
women.
And so he almost has no reason to fail.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just part of his problem. He's actually succeeding a lot, but that's not really where he wants to go.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know how to change that course.
And I don't want to take us away from poetry because we know we want you to read some and all, but it,
we
just
do.
When we were talking about what's behind the, you know.
Right,
like,
and I think we can get into the book
after our
8:30 break.
Absolutely.
And then we'll get into Shields and find out what he's been up to, which is a lot.
That, yes.
Peter, would you mind reading us? I'm looking at something that you've got laying on the table here, and I did read this, and I love that poem.
Oh, okay.
Winged Rats. Now, if you're New York, East Coast, we all know what winged rats are.
Mm-hmm, okay. We sure do.
Pigeons.
And kind of where this comes from is we moved south of Market in San Francisco. It's called South of the Slot, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved down there. It was like the night of the living dead. This is probably 18, 19 years ago. And it's still not really bucolic, but it's not like it used to be. And we moved from Russian Hill, which is very beautiful. And so we get down there, and it's the poem is about how your opinion changes about things. And, you know, pigeons, you're an urban person, and pigeons are these crappy, terrible winged rats, you
right.
know. And yet when we moved down to South of Market, when it would rain in San Francisco, if we can remember those days, and, you know, a downpour would be coming down, and there across the street on some eve or something would be this poor pigeon just shivering, and he's just as miserable as all the rest of us, and he's another urbanite just trying to get by, and so he kind of became nature to us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because that's it. We don't have any other nature down there except the rat guys, which I give them. I mean, I haven't gotten warm and fuzzy with them like the pigeons, but I'm going to have to do a little contortion here to do this. I've never done it with a microphone before, so let's give it a try. Right?
Give it a try.
First time for everything.
Okay, then.
Okay, here we go. Winged rats. Winged rats. Bullshit, unless you consider they ate the same crap, but you'd be wrong. These low-flying aviators of the cityscape, they got zip codes and statues and ordinances as white as the driven snows. In some hoods, they're the only fauna that doesn't attack and kill as order, or destroy the trees with piss and shit, and forget the grass. Instead, these citizens of aerial reconnaissance clean up after bums and partygoers, doing such civic duties as eating the rice and beans regurgitated by soup kitchen devotees or their counterparts booging in from the bedroom communities, leaving their suburban blight for cleanup by those living aloft, on the ledge, with only one way to fall, pilotless and no safety net, dying alone, earthbound in their morning suits, having seen it all on the hardest streets, yet nothing of remembrance, not even the homage of nevermore.
Love it.
Mm.
Thank you. Now, earthy.
Mm-hmm.
Earthy. And having grown up around pigeons, because in Del Mar there's pigeons everywhere, you know, we used to chase them with cars. But then you hit one, and you go, oh, man. The pigeon. So then you get out there and you see if you can help it. And
but they break their contract when you hit them.
I know.
I mean, it's like, I mean, that's one of their jobs, to get out of the way.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's one of their performance jobs.
And they're fast.
They are.
Yeah. I mean, they can hop out of the way of a car in a nanosecond. They're gone. They're like squirrels.
See, in my mind, I've got Mary Poppins, you know, singing about pigeons.
Oh. Aren't you fortunate?
It's kind of like that other side to the pigeon story.
Okay, would you like to do our rib ad without cracking up?
Sure. And we're looking forward to dinner there.
We are. Next Tuesday.
Tuesday night. Come out and meet us at Sutter's Mill.
If you would.
Yeah. Sutter's Mill in Simi Valley is one of the finest steakhouses in Ventura County. At Sutter's, you will find casual dining with a touch of elegance in a rustic steakhouse atmosphere. Their well-trained staff strives to provide their guests with a great dining experience. At Sutter's, you will find the finest in steaks and seafood, along with specialty items such as barbecue pork ribs and deep-fried chicken or shrimp. Sutter's offers a full bar with special happy hour pricing and never charges a corkage fee. Visit their website at Sutter's4dining.com to make online reservations and view their hours and menus. Their menu also offers a summer special section, which gives you a 20% discount Monday through Thursday from 4 p.m. till close. Please enjoy. For reservations, call, get out that pencil or get out your phone, put it in there, 805-520-4797, or go to www.suttersfordining.com on the web.
Good job, Bobby Jean. Wait a minute. Here, we'll have to give you the clap.
Please don't give me the clap.
I never figured you'd say that.
This is LA Talk Radio, right?
And we can say what we want. That's exactly right. Okay, back with Mr. Peter J. Stripes, and more poetry about rats and flying rats and books.
And books. Actually, can we talk about poetry for one more moment?
Absolutely.
Peter, I think it takes a special soul to write poetry. How did you find poetry or the writing, or how did poetry find you? What about it?
Yeah, that... It had always been with me. A couple of years ago, it was a really black period, and I think we all have them. And I came to the field of crickets. I thought I was going to write and have this big conversation with people, and I never knew I was going to be on LA Talk Radio. So maybe there is divine intervention.
Yeah, there is divine intervention.
There is divine intervention.
We are part of it. We are part.
I truly believe that. Yeah. As I said to you earlier, I feel like a ping pong player here on center court at Wimbledon, so I feel very lucky about that. But anyhow, so it was a really dark period, and the darkest I think ever in my life. So I wrote my myself some haiku, and I sent myself a birthday card. It wasn't so weird as I actually put it in the mail and had the postage stamp on it. So, but I did write this birthday card to myself with this haiku, and the haiku was about going back to the beginning. It was just this quick going back, to find this beginning. It's starting, saying it was something like ages, but this time, and you'd go back to the beginning. So I started going back to the beginning, and I started going through all my old work, and I just found all this poetry that I'd written. And I, if someone had asked me if I wrote poetry, I'd say no, I really hadn't. But there it was. So it was always just kind of a part of me coming out. And so it wasn't really conscious.
And did you read poetry? Were you?
Yeah. So. Like, the Gary Snyder and just a lot of osmosis on it, from Emily Dickinson on through, mm-hmm. and being impressed, especially by Emily, because such a poet where she can. Write something so beautiful about hummingbirds or whatever, but yet a dirge is playing in the background. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you get away with that. It's just so masterful.
Well, she was Emily Dickinson. That's how she got away with
She's
it.
She's a genius. Yeah,
so. She truly was.
Yes.
And I love the deal about poetry that it really doesn't have to rhyme.
Right.
It just has to have a pentameter to it. And I've read some poems that have just been phenomenal. And, I'm not, like I said earlier, I'm not a real big poetry guy, but some of the poems that I've read that were not rhyming, but they were just really, really good and insightful. Mm-hmm. And I actually have read some of yours that the rhyming really isn't there, but the insight is.
Yes, thank you.
And oh, I meant to, you call yourself an iconoclastic modern poet.
Yeah.
Contemporary poet.
Yeah, an iconoclastic non-connector. See, again, remember my business plan was divine intervention.
Mm-hmm.
And so especially when I started out with these books, and as I said, Past Oz at one time was about 500,000 words. A chainsaw had to be taken to it. I sent it to my beloved publisher, Carly McCracken. And I have to just stop there for a second. Carly McCracken, Mark Twain wants to own that name. And not only does she come from Missouri, her address is, let's see, her mailing address is Pilot's Knob.
Wow.
Now she will kill me hearing all this. In a sense, she's a city girl. She's from St. Louis, but Carly rose like a phoenix. And she when we first published this, this was I think her company was called. It was called. I don't think it was IE Novel, and it was so early in the concept of e-books. Those were the days when everybody said, "I'm not gonna. I have to have a book in my hand. I can't do that." And we didn't even know. So we didn't know how to formatting was all crazy and all this. And Carly, we all hit some bumps in the road, and IE Novel went out of business. Right, I think Past Oz bankrupted her. I didn't know. Maybe morally as well as financially. But anyhow, Carly has risen like the phoenix with Crimson Cloak Publishing, and we're back in action with Past Oz. That's why there's a little mm-hmm. question of how this is all going.
Mm-hmm.
So. Some of the. I'm just going to leave it at that. But Carly's back, and that's Past Oz, and it has quite a history on that. As I said, it was like I wrote like 20 years, and it was like I think I was doing the Dead Sea Scrolls, and now I'm just taking them out of the jar and trying to put it all together.
We'd spoken earlier, and you had mentioned that you had a rejection letter.
Yes,
and I believe you brought it with you.
Yes.
And I would love for you to read that rejection letter, because that's one thing we never cover very much here.
And you had received quite a few. I mean, you had received quite a few.
Well, everybody gets some.
Well, yeah. It means that he also was putting it out there.
Right.
Because some people kind of, try and then they stop. Because it's hard. You really are vulnerable. You know, you're putting it out there.
Are you saying that more than most?
No. I'm saying that you just continued.
Now, I must say that this is a handwritten rejection letter.
So cool.
It is not a form letter.
So cool.
Yeah, I mean, who else pays for you to get turned down? Even if it's 27 cents.
Right.
I mean, like, they can't, like, the agent can't, like, pony up 27 cents
no.
and turn it down. Impossible.
Well, it's 49 cents now.
Right.
Or 48.
Well, I'm going to, I blush in the rejection.
Okay.
I blush in the rejection. Now, I guess I shouldn't say his name, but we've all seen the letterhead, and he supposedly was a literary agent from New York.
Of some sort.
Cable Cogency.
Right.
So if anyone wants to get in touch with them, Cable.
All right.
Cogency. Well, this was on Past Oz, and this was when it was really large. And it says, "Dear Mr. Streitz, interesting letter." Oh, I have to tell him I lied about the having his card. Dear Mr. S, interesting letter, and I assume it is really my card you have. But I've never been in the Union Square Cafe, that's in New York, and I am nowhere so intelligent and witty as your letter indicates. About Oz, I sense a brilliance here, an oblique and contradictory brilliance that requires more talent than I have to comprehend. Too old, I think. I am. Good luck." So that's a big old, that's a real
that's
time.
Nice, that's a nice rejection letter. That,
mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah.
It's like we talked
it's
earlier.
Encouraging.
You know, it's like, we don't want you, but you're still pretty.
It's an encouraging. It's encouraging.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Can
yeah.
he back up the
sure.
the brilliant part? I mean,
yeah.
can he like just... I mean, aren't you out there like Max Perkins?
Well, they could have put bullet
brilliant.
Points on it, but yeah, apparently yeah. he hand wrote
yeah,
it, so
like,
he couldn't do
it's
that.
It's like, yeah, you just aren't brilliant enough. And besides, I can't weed out 200,000 words.
Okay, let's get to Past Oz, Bobby.
Well, it's a fascinating book. It's there's so much.
There's a lot of pages.
There's so much going on. And early on, I was intrigued. The major character, Shields, goes by the name of Shields. He's Maximilian Shields. He's Shields Terry. But Shields is the name that we know him throughout the book. We really are invited into his head. And we're living the story through his through his eyes and through his memories and as he's going about his day. And I was intrigued early on because he will often quote John.
Yes.
John, not biblical John, not scripture, but he'll quote somebody named, you know, John. John used to say, John something, something, something. And I kept thinking, all right, some of these other people that he talks about, we've met them. Vinny mm-hmm. and, you know, okay, mm-hmm. all right, Ruth. Oh, now we're actually meeting mm-hmm. Ruth. Oh, okay, so what's the deal with John? And finally, even in my notes, I'm like, okay, who is John?
Who's John?
were they kid friends? Because some of these folks he knows from mm-hmm. being a child. Mm-hmm. And then finally, you fill us in a little bit near the last quarter of the – it's like a roller coaster ride. You know, you take us up, and then we go down, we go around, and then – like the last, I don't know, third of the book or quarter of the book, it's like bing, 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 bing. And there's lots of plot. mm-hmm. And we're moving right along, and then little questions are being answered. New questions are arising, and then they get answered. And I found the whole, you know, how you built it, how you put it together, to be very, very interesting. And we do finally learn a little bit. I'm not going to do any spoilers about John. Mm-hmm. I had the idea that maybe John was going to be who we find out about John, but you really take us on into a really interesting world. And he's a salesman for a computer company, actually mm-hmm. director of advertising eventually.
Yes, yes.
And but he has an affinity for bars.
Yes, he does.
And spends a fair amount of his time in bars. And tell us why the word drunk is in a capital D.
Well, the drunk is there's almost three of them speaking all the time, and it's all Shields pretty mm-hmm. much. And the drunk. We all say, I didn't mean to say that. I was drunk. Well, you did say that.
Uh-huh.
How is the drunk not you? Mm-hmm. And so when the drunk speaks, and Shields will say, Shields will just disappear in a way, and he'll start saying the drunk's talking.
Mm-hmm.
And the
drunk, so it becomes a name.
He becomes a real person.
Yeah,
because
a real person.
Again, it was like the asshole thing is, oh, I was drunk. Mm-hmm. You mean you didn't mean anything you said the other night? You didn't mm-hmm. mean, and it's like, of course. You meant part of mm-hmm. that. I'm
and
sure.
some of it yeah. he remembers, and then he has some holes. You know, he comes out one morning and his car is all kind of screwed up, and he's like, I don't remember. So he has those blackout moments too.
Yeah, it's almost like sometimes both John and the drunk will leave him, and so everything becomes an unreliable narrator, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. which of course is death to everything, any novel, I guess. But on we go with mm-hmm. John is, again, I think those are the he possesses something Shields doesn't quite possess, and I think it is that honesty, and I think that's when John comes to the fore and will just say these things, and Shields sees it as a different person.
Mm-hmm.
He sees and it's really different from him, not like the mm-hmm. crossing
it's
over,
very different from him.
But and he almost has like this wisdom that I think Shields admires and wants to get to, but he can't quite get there.
Right.
So John will just Shields will just. Give that thought to John. He'll just say, oh, John said that.
Right.
And so that's kind of where John, in his revolving around the story, it is kind of mysterious. It is kind of that when we're trying to figure something out, how we keep banging two things against mm-hmm, it in our own
mm-hmm,
heads,
mm-hmm.
and then we kind of pick one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we pick one. Is this really what I should be doing? Well, John's kind of that one he's banging it up against. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he'll turn his back on him, and sometimes he won't. So
there are two worlds that we see with Shields. One is in the bars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't remember if it's John that says it, but at one point you even say bars, fisticuffs. It's knocked out. You say it very sparsely, but it's about when you go into a bar, it's almost like you'd be ready. It's a combat sport, mm-hmm. I think is what you actually say. Yeah. And I'd never really thought, I don't really go to bars very often, and certainly if I do, it's more like the Cheers kind of bar, you know? But I thought, because we see him get involved in fisticuffs in a few different places that he goes into. But I thought, that's interesting, combat sport. And then we see him in the corporate world, where he's a very natty dresser, and which is not the impression, not my first thought when we meet him in the beginning and in the bar and with his doctor friend and all. I don't picture him necessarily the same as this real corporate kind of guy. And all I could think was, you had to do a lot of research or have lived in both of these worlds, because I think you absolutely nail those two environments for us as a reader.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm in bars most of the time.
I was just going to say, you probably don't want to admit to that much bar time.
As an observer?
our living rooms are all different styles, and those are where all the rock and tours are and everything. So, what goes on a lot with Shields' behavior is really what Pastaz is about. And he's really kind of starting to destroy himself, and we the reader can kind of see that, but he keeps just pushing it aside, mm-hmm. but he's just putting himself in these situations mm-hmm. that you really shouldn't be in, and he's almost like he's like poking the bear all the time.
Yeah,
but I think I don't think it spoils anything to kind of talk about Pastaz or what it kind of means, and I think in the world of the book and the novel, Pastaz is we're all born white, black, Jewish, Catholic, whatever we are, but we get to a certain point in our life where we have kind of enough knowledge and enough wherewithal and kind of and maybe even enough money or not, but that isn't so important. But we get to a point where, instead of everything just being coincidence and circumstance, we could actually do that thing that we always want to do, that mm-hmm. original or initial passion. We could set out on that. Mm-hmm. We could start to do that. But it's very hard to do, which we all know. I mean, everyone knows. They want to go to... Well, Shields, I think, is taking a... I think he can't make that decision either, so I think he's going to get forced into mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And I think it might be at his own... hand.
Yeah.
Do you want to? I know we're running almost out of time, but you want to ask
very
our question?
Out of time. We're like 2 minutes.
So we need to ask our question.
Have you ever had writer's block?
Without it, I wouldn't write any of that poetry. I'll tell you that. And I'll say this. I'll say when I get writer's block, I never see it that way. First of all, when I get writer's block, I always know when I start writing it'll be the best I did. But I've learned what that's about. When I start getting writer's block, the beavers come. And who are the beavers? They come, and I start thinking about, I know there's something I want to, and they'll start building this dam in front of all my thoughts. And it's just the waters will keep getting higher and higher mm-hmm. and higher. And the more aggravated I get, the more crazy I get because I can't write, it's almost the reservoir just keeps going mm-hmm. up and mm-hmm. up and up. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden... The water's too high and it explodes. And then the poetry starts to come forward. So I don't say I look forward to writer's block, but it's a really a good thing to. I think it's almost a good thing to have. I mean, when it happens to me, I just expect good things out of it to come.
Well, that's the first.
How eloquent.
We just have a few minutes left. Can you tell our listeners email addresses, where they can find you?
It's Peter Jacob Streitz. I don't know how to spell it, at sbcglobal.net. And if it's Peter Jacob Streitz on Facebook, I'll be there with my 52 Facebook friends. So anybody wants
and your coffee mugs.
I'm gonna have my mugs. I used to have thousands of strangers as friends, but I got rid of them all. No, I have 52 people that kind of they don't mind listening to this crazed poetry and stuff. But and then I only just say when I had all my thousands of friends, Zuckerberg, he used to throw me in the you go in the penalty box mm-hmm. for weeks at a time. because I kept breaking the rules. So, it depended how much this person snitched on me that I was.
Oh my gosh!
that I was stalking them or something, and then he put you out for, you know, it was like a hockey penalty.
You'd go off. I have not experienced this yet.
And then you had to read everything and say, I won't do. You have to check it off again.
Uh-huh.
And they'll let you back in to find more strangers as friends.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, well, we're out of time, or we will be in a minute, and I'd like to take a minute to thank Jerry Christina for her just great job in getting everybody booked and booking up through the year and having to go back and tell everybody now our time has changed to August 4th. So thank you, Jerry.
Absolutely.
You've done a great job.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, July 28th, we have Eric Heisner and Al Bringus. That ought to be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And Russ Avison will be with us.
And you must take pictures.
Yeah. Well, Russ and I don't take pictures. Bobby's the picture taker. Actually, Bobby and Jim.
It's divine intervention for them, too.
Yeah, I know.
It becomes a historical document.
It does.
Or can happen.
Some sort of historical thing. Yeah. Document, picture, yeah. Okay.
I'm proof of it. I'm here.
And then the podcast link.
I want to thank you for coming in, Peter.
Thank you. Wonderful having you
in the studio. And meeting your lovely wife, Donna, who is again, happy birthday.
Yep.
And enjoy your coffee mugs if you drink coffee.
I don't even know.
A lot of people don't. Thanks for joining us. Our Thursday is done. And we'll be here next Thursday with you all, same time, 8 o'clock, and the following Thursday at 7.
At 7.
So make sure you mark your calendars. August 4th, we start a 7 o'clock shift. Thank you again for joining us. It's been a wonderful time having Peter with us. Y'all have a good week, and we'll meet you up next week.